The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So today, I would like to talk about effort. And for those people for whom effort is an oppressive topic, I'll talk about non-effort. And so effort is a, without effort, there's no practice. You know, unless you meditate, there's no meditation. You have to make some effort to meditate. if you have values, important values that you want to live by, without living by them, without making efforts to live by them, those values really have no purpose. Just kind of abstract values you carry around in your head. But, you know, they need to be put into action. And in the same, similar way, Buddhism wouldn't exist because Buddhism itself exists only as people who practice it, who live it, who walk the path. And so it requires effort. And in the classic teachings, there's all these lists of psychological practice factors that come into play when someone walks the path. And it's interesting that effort appears in a number of them, and it's interesting what effort follows. So, for example, in the list called the five faculties we have, capacities we have that come into play when we do anything at all, effort follows the factor of confidence or faith. So what we have faith in, what we have confidence in, what we trust, is a important factor for the arising of effort. In a sense, the faith factor or the confidence factor is what gives direction to effort, what inspires us to make some effort in some direction. So based on confidence, then there's action, effort. In a different list called the 10 paramis, 10 perfections, effort follows wisdom. And so wise understanding is the basis for wise effort. And so you need having some kind of understanding helps us understand what kind of effort to make, what effort to make, what kind of actions to do, and how to make the effort in those actions. In a different list called the Eightfold Path, effort follows effort factor follows the three ethics factors. So right speech, right action, and right livelihood. And the idea that making appropriate right effort in Buddhist practice is based, hopefully based on a foundation of being having personal integrity. So somehow there's something about being settled on oneself, being whole in oneself, having integrity or ethical integrity, which is then a fit basis for further actions or effort. So and the Buddha, there's all kinds of beautiful quotes from the Buddha, I think, oppressive quotes. Like he said things like, Buddhas only point the way, they only teach. It's up to you to make the effort. Or there's even a little quote says, be quick to make effort. So for some people, this kind of language is oppressive because of some people have very quick associations with the word effort. You know, you have to make effort, or you have to do this. And so what are some of the associations, maybe negative associations, when you hear the word effort? I mean, I can offer some. So for example, you know, as soon as you're told you have to make effort, then there's a feeling, well, I'm not capable. Or doubt arises, you know, it's just exhausting. You know, just to make effort. And I just need a break. I don't need to make more effort. Or now I'm being told what to do by someone. And it's, the rebellious nature comes up and says, no way, you know. It's oppressive to be told. Or there can be fear of failure. If I make effort, I might fail. Occasionally there's a fear of success. Some people don't want to succeed because of what might happen. What are some of the other things that might come up for people that when the thought of effort or the concept of effort comes up, you know, the red flags go up? What?
Time.
Time. I don't have time for that. Okay.
It's work.
It's work. And what's in work? What's
your it's some work.
It's, a work implies exhaustion.
Like real work, we'll go like do Monday morning, repetitious, it's mindless.
So for you, the word concept work means repetitious, it's mindless, is what you do Monday morning. And so just effort kind of ties into that kind of idea of what work is for you. Good? What else?
Unpleasant.
Unpleasant. How is effort unpleasant?
Because if it didn't take effort, it would be fun to do.
Oh, if it didn't take effort, it'd be fun to do. So play doesn't require any effort.
Right.
Even though it requires lots of energy. So there's the difference between effort and energy, I suppose, right? So
yeah.
The word effort has a connotation of unpleasant. Yeah.
Do it.
Oh, obligation.
The hammer of effort.
The hammer of effort. So, tell. I see. So in the past, the idea of effort came along with the idea of striving and trying so hard that, that caused problems, stress. So now there's fear of making effort, because if I make effort, I'll do myself in. Yes?
We seem to have picked up this idea of great athletes who do things effortlessly, and therefore, if we have to exert effort, it seems to imply that we're not able or skillful. If we were, then we wouldn't need effort. It would just naturally happen.
Ah, so if we were wise and capable, then we would be like great athletes who we have this idea of it, that they do their work, their athleticism effortlessly. And because it's not effortless for us, we've already failed. we're already losers. Yes?
Suffocation.
Wow. So you like to say a little bit more about how... Oh, so there's all this energy, like in meditation, sitting still. There's all this boundless energy that wants to boogie-woogie dance or something and move. And to sit still, it's, you know, it's oppressive to sometimes to kind of hold that in and be still. Yes, please.
It seems to negate spontaneity. Negates
spontaneity. Because if you're making effort, it's intentional, it's pre-planned, it's all that, and so there's in then churning away with your effort, there's no room for something new to happen or something. Yes, please, in the back.
The expectation that something will happen, so
if there's effort, you might get tripped up around the expectation that something's going to happen, and that can take many forms. It could be expecting the unreasonable. It could be, having an expectation which, you're measuring yourself by the expectation, and so if you don't succeed, then it's a feeling of failure, perhaps.
For me, effort, if we label something as effort, it implies that there's something resisting.
So if you label something effort, it implies there's resistance to it. There's so effort requires overcoming some inertia at something.
It's like Mara saying to the Buddha, who do you think you are that you can sit here until you're enlightened?
So like Mara saying to the Buddha, who are you? Who do you think you are? You can sit here and become enlightened. So doubt arises. Who are you to do this effort? Who are you to do this activity?
Opinion of others. Watching you do the effort, uh-huh. Worried about how you're being seen by others. Uh-huh.
So not only might you fail, but you might fail publicly. Okay, I'm convinced. Let's just let's just throw in the towel and go to the beach.
I guess
I always have the question of who's making the effort. Am I doing it or am I getting pulled into something, getting committed to something?
So is the effort being motivated by you, or are you kind of being herded by other people, your boss or peer pressure or something, so it's not really personal?
Sacrifice?
Oh, yeah, so sacrifice is important. You got to kind of, so the idea of effort means you have to give something up for yourself. Let's stop. I feel I need now to try to redeem the word effort for us. Good luck. So who has positive associations with efforts? Who in the hear the word effort kind of oh, that's energizing and good. Yeah.
Direction.
What?
Direction.
Direction. So effort means there's a direction and some hope that you have, maybe going someplace. Yeah. All the way in the back. Yeah, but I'm sorry, I couldn't hear, so.
I think if you want to make consistent progress in any endeavor, one has to make consistent effort.
So effort is welcoming, because if you want to make any kind of progress in something and grow in some way, some effort is needed. Okay? Yes?
I experience effort as an aliveness. So in like a doing, there's a real aliveness.
So effort, he experiences effort as an aliveness, doing as an aliveness. So for you, you delight in the aliveness, the vitality that comes with making effort. Okay, good. Yes, in the corner?
Accomplishment.
So effort is associated with accomplishment, and that's a positive thing, making accomplishment something to appreciate, to celebrate. Last week we talked about sympathetic joy, and that's one of those things to feel joy. It is a people's accomplishments. It's a beautiful thing. Yes?
Fulfillment.
So with effort comes fulfillment. If you sit in your couch and do nothing, there's, you know, you there's not much fulfillment except filling your couch. Yes?
Once you
make a commitment to doing something, then it becomes effortless. You can get behind it. Okay?
Expansion.
Effort is associated with expansion. Expansion how? So going towards something that's more open and expansive rather than being contracted. It's kind of breaking out of your shell, maybe. Okay, beautiful.
Adventurousness.
So Stephen associates it with adventurousness.
It's focus. It's aligning yourself around something. It's getting yourself on a path.
So it's focus, aligning yourself around something, get yourself on a path. So it gives a sense of purpose to life, direction in life. So effort has association with fierceness and integrity and alignment with yourself and your posture in a good way. So it's associated with inner strength and power, perhaps, in a nice way. Yes?
Inspiration.
Sorry?
Inspiration.
So effort and inspiration go together.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the heroism, maybe the bodhisattva idea.
So associated with heroism and the bodhisattva idea. Actually, the word for effort that's translated as effort often in English or energy is virya. And virya means comes from the word vira, which means hero. So this idea of being heroic, the effort is not built into the word in Pali and Buddhism. I see some in the back there. Yes, author.
Creativity and energy.
Creativity and energy. So with effort comes creativity. Yes.
Freedom of choice.
So with effort, there's a possibility of freedom of choice.
Anticipation of something good happening.
So anticipation of something good happened. When my son was young, I don't know how old he was, 7 or something, there was a period of time where he got tremendous joy out of anticipation. I never seen anything like it. You know, it's like, you know, It was so novel for me. He would lay in bed and think about what was coming up, and it was more like the anticipation was more fun than the event. And so I went through that phase. It was quite nice. Yes?
Competence.
So with effort, there can come, or there can be association of competence, which feels good, right? Okay. Yes.
You mentioned joy in anticipation. I think there's joy in that moment of exertion too.
So the joy of exertion, the joy of just doing. Yes.
Even if you fail, the effort can make you stronger, strengthen that muscle.
So even if you fail, the effort, even in failed effort, the effort that you exerted strengthened the muscle of that effort or that endeavor. And you might also learn from your so-called failures. Maybe it's useful, hopefully not discouraging, but useful to say that the batting average for meditators is a lot poorer than the batting average of professional baseball players.
That's why we don't make as much money.
That's why he said. That's why we don't make as much money. He said. meditation is a lot about losing the present moment and then coming back, and losing the present moment, coming back, and missing the ball. And every once in a while, we hit the ball. So, any more thoughts? Yes? Satisfaction of going beyond your comfort level. Great. Wow, I'm so delighted that we've managed to redeem the word. So there are a lot of associations with the word effort. I think it's important for everyone to look at their own associations, because without effort, and there's some people have this strong, some of the descriptions are very strong negative connotations to effort. It's work. Some of them were delightful and seem almost like play. If effort is simply the expenditure of energy in doing something, which is a neutral statement, then what is our relationship to doing? What's our relationship to effort, to expending energy? And because the relationship you have will color the doing that you do. It might prevent you from engagement. It might mean when you engage with reluctance, with hostility even. You might engage with too much expectation, with too much desire for the goal. You might be engaged in a very beautiful way. Sometimes the relationship to effort means that some people delight in the efforting itself, and just to be able to exert oneself, like playing a game. Some people just delight in the game, in the playing of it. It doesn't matter whether you win or lose. Just the doing is fun, and some people in Buddhist practice can have the same thing. There's just a delight in just practicing. It doesn't really matter how well you succeed. And some people put so much emphasis on succeeding and success, and they have to get somewhere, and they measure themselves, and it can kind of trip them up quite a bit. I think the more you measure your progress, spiritual progress, the slower the progress is. And then some people, in terms of a spiritual path, like being on a Buddhist path, just simply knowing there's a path, and that you're on the path and you're walking it, is so valuable, so meaningful, that succeeding is kind of second in importance. It's not that important to get, it's important to make progress in a sense, but even if you don't make progress, it's so special that you actually found, in this lifetime, found a path and were able to walk it. Isn't that great? And so you don't measure everything by success. You measure by, wow, I'm on the path and I'll do the best I can, but even if I don't get very far, it's just pretty cool that I found it. So to look at your associations, your attitudes towards effort, I think is really important, really valuable. And it's something that you can journal about, you can talk to friends about. If you have a good friend who knows you well enough over many years, perhaps you can say, this is what I'm thinking about effort, but what have you observed about me? Maybe they have some observations about you that maybe is not obvious to you about your relationship to making effort. So I think that, you know, that kind of personal exploration is good. In the teachings of the Buddha, he gave a guideline for effort. And this guideline is really lays at the heart of what the Buddha was trying to teach. The Buddha did not start his teachings on a first principle, but rather started his teachings on a problem or a question. And the problem is the problem of suffering, which is kind of a simple, you know, catch-all word for stress, distress, anxiety, you know, whatever we call our anguish or suffering. And then the question is, how can we overcome that? How can we get beyond it? How can we become free? How can we be relieved, released of our suffering? So that's rather than the principle that this is the truth. So like some people take as a Buddhist principle, you know, that this is like the fundamental teaching of Buddhism. Someone asks, what's the basic teachings of Buddhism? And some people will say, oh, that there's no self. Well, that's a principle. The Buddha never said that, by the way. But that's starting with a principle. Rather, the teachings of not self are meant to be an action that answers the question, how do you overcome suffering? It's not meant to be a principle to believe or teachings to believe. It's meant to be an approach, an action that helps free us from suffering. So it starts with not with a principle, but with a question and a problem. And then the emphasis in the effort is, what is the effort that's useful to help solve that problem? And what is the effort that's not helpful? So the Buddha used the word skillful. What's skillful and what's not skillful? Or I like the words helpful and not helpful for this purpose. So then, in the time of the Buddha, people had all kinds of ideas about pleasure. And people still have all kinds of different religions have ideas about pleasure, the appropriateness of pleasure. And you have some people who feel like you shouldn't have any pleasure. You know, that if pleasure is kind of a sign of sinfulness or something, and you should, you know, have pain is better than pleasure, and if you have enough pain, then somehow you'll get redeemed, you'll get saved, you'll something. There are some extreme religious teachings in those regards. As there were around that in time of the Buddha, there were people who were really into the importance of suffering, ascetic practices, as a way of exhausting your karma. You have to kind of, or starve your defilement, starve your bad nature so that it wouldn't interfere, so you can set free the soul or something. And then there was, back in ancient India, there was also a very strong negative idea about overindulgence in sensual pleasure. So you can't do that. So people came to the Buddha and said, what should we do about pleasure? And so his answer about pleasure was not based on a principle, but rather, in a sense, but you know, a right and wrong, but rather was pragmatic. So the question was what you should pursue, to pursue the pleasure, which is helpful, and avoid the pleasure that's not helpful. And then what about displeasure? What about discomfort? What about pain? What's your relationship with that? And the Buddha said, you should avoid the pain, the discomfort, which is not helpful, and you should not avoid the discomfort, the pain, which is helpful. So this requires our wisdom, our discernment, to look at every situation and see what is this pleasure, is this helpful or not helpful? To look at discomfort, pain, and say, is this helpful to stay with this or is it not helpful? So for example, if there's a lot of pleasure in drinking alcohol, you know, it's certainly pleasant and pleasure. Should we justify it and just get into it because of the pleasure of it? Not if your whole family and work life is being destroyed by the addiction to alcohol. So that pursuit of that pleasure is not helpful for someone. There is pleasure to be found in, like last week we talked about sympathetic joy, which is a very pleasant thing, it's enjoyable. And sympathetic joy is a pleasure which opens the heart, softens the heart, which supports and helps the spiritual life in the Buddhist point of view. And that's a pleasure to pursue. There's the pleasure of meditation is considered to be one of the great important pleasures for meditators, and it's a useful pleasure to have. So if you start feeling pleasure or even rapture or ecstasy in meditation, for the Buddha, that was a good thing to have happen. That's supportive. So don't avoid that pleasure. So certain pleasures you should avoid. Now, what kind of pains and discomforts do you avoid, and what do you not avoid? Some people have the attitude that if it's uncomfortable, if there's pain, that it's already bad. I'm already a loser or a failure, or it should be avoided at all costs. A successful life is a comfortable life. I must be doing something wrong if I'm uncomfortable. But there are some times when it's good to avoid discomfort. But there are times when discomfort should be embraced. So, for example, if I have, like I remember when I was a new practitioner, I started noticing how much selfing went on for me, how much I was trying to prove myself, apologize for myself, defend myself in relation to other people. And there was, I was really caught up in this whole world of being someone or not being someone. And I saw at some point I had the opportunity to just become a hermit or like just pull back. It was so painful to see all this that I didn't want to be with that pain. So I'll just recede, go to my room, just not be involved with people at all. So I just avoid this thing. Now, that wasn't so useful for me. What was useful for me was to stay in the fire. This habit, strong habit I have, and allow myself to feel that discomfort, to live with that discomfort, so I can see much more clearly how, what I was doing, so I can get through it, understand it. So there was an example where it was painful to see myself, but it was valuable to, in a certain kind of way, embrace it, to go towards it, to really understand deeply and not to avoid it. Someone who has an addiction problem, it can be very unpleasant to not pick up the bottle. Some of the sensations and feelings, and you know, part of the reason why some people are addicted is because of very being uncomfortable in some way in themselves. And so, to constantly avoid their own discomfort, their fear, their anxiety, it might not be helpful. It might be helpful in the right way, with the right support, to actually learn to be present for one's discomfort and to open to it and see what's there, to unpack it, to learn to relax into it, to go through it rather than keeping avoiding it. So there's lots of examples where, where I think in life where it's appropriate to be present for discomfort. For meditators sometimes there's physical pain that arises in meditation. What should you do? There are people who follow a principle. I've been around Buddhists who do this, that you should just sit through it all. No matter what the pain is, sit through it. And, you know, I've known people who've actually physically damaged themselves because they were going to, you know, their knees went out and they needed knee surgery because they were going to sit with knee pain no matter what. You know, that was the principle of being a samurai. And then I've known people, lots of people, who first indication of pain, hints of pain, you know, it's to be avoided at all costs. They shift, they move, they run out the door, anything to, you know. But so, you know, pain should not be experienced. That's the principle people have. But the approach, I think, here in Buddhist practice is to ask the question, is it helpful to stay with this pain or is it not helpful to stay with it? So sometimes it's not helpful to stay with the pain and sometimes it is. So an example of where it might be helpful to stay with the pain, there might be physical pain in meditation that arises from chronically tense muscles. And so like I feel it sometimes in my shoulders. I hold a certain amount of tension in my shoulders at times. And so when I sit down to meditate, sometimes I'm aware of discomfort in my shoulders, a little tense. So I could have the policy, no way am I going to feel that. It's uncomfortable, it's bad, and it's probably a sign that I'm a failed Buddhist. And, you know, I'm actually into teaching this stuff. I shouldn't have tense shoulders. And so, you know, I better run away or hide or avoid it, or maybe I should do some yoga and stretching and exercising and running, and I'll eventually get to the meditation. That's one approach. Another approach, which is what I take, I say, oh, you know, given how I live my life, that's there today, and what I found is useful is to, in a certain kind of way, embrace that the aching or the tension that's there and just hold it in awareness, hold it lightly and openly. And it's actually more useful to be present for that discomfort than it is to avoid it. And it's more useful sometimes to be present for it than to get a massage or do something exercise that might make it go away. Because if that's kind of like dealing it from the outside in. And meditation deals with it from the inside out. And you get to look, at or work with the deeper forces, the impulses that bring up the stress to begin with. And so it's useful to stay without discomfort. Sometimes it can be quite intense, the chronically held muscles and how we get how things are held. Sometimes it's quite intense, the emotions we have. You know, if you have maybe through some mistake, or maybe not a mistake, maybe your frustration got the upper hand, and in your frustration, you said something really mean to your best friend, you know, who's been really supportive of you lately. You know, if the end of that, when you realize what you've done, if you just say, oh, so what, and you kind of just go skipping down the street, kind of, you know, whistling Dixie or something, I don't think that's, you know, I'm a spiritual person, everything's fine, you know. I don't think that's a very wise life. I think that if you have just, out of your poor judgment, you did something or said something really mean to your good friend, really hurt your friend, I think the appropriate thing is to feel your own discomfort around that. And if you don't allow yourself to feel that discomfort, I don't think you're going to grow. I don't think you're going to acknowledge or really feel the fullness of what happened there. It's appropriate to feel discomfort sometimes. So the wise understanding would be to look at, is this helpful or not helpful to feel this pleasure? Is it helpful or not helpful to feel this discomfort or this pain? And then, you know, it's not always obvious, but to at least ask the question and begin exploring it rather than have it. So the same thing with effort. What kind of effort should we make here? How am I making effort? What way should I make effort here? I should be heroic. Or, I don't believe in effort. I think effortless effort. I found it's better not to do anything, just let things unwind. So the question is, what is helpful? And sometimes it's helpful to make a lot of effort. And sometimes it's not helpful to make a lot of effort. Sometimes it's helpful to make no effort. And sometimes it's not helpful to make no effort. People who are chronic doers, neurotic doers, it's really useful to practice non-doing for a while. And it's amazing what can happen when we stop our efforts. If you sit down quietly and stop making effort, stop making progress, stop trying to accomplish anything, sometimes it allows something deep inside to settle, to unwind, and something deep inside to come forth and show itself. So much so that sometimes it feels like the Buddhist path when you're meditating opens up for you by itself, effortlessly, if you just get out of the way. And other times, nothing will happen if you just sit there, do nothing. I knew a woman once who, after many years of practice, very, very intense, serious practice, seemingly, she looked like a great practitioner, she said, forget this Buddhism, I'm leaving. Because nothing happened to her. And then I kind of inquired, well, what were you doing all these years? Well, I was just sitting there. And I thought if I just sat, eventually, if I did my time on the cushion, I'd be rewarded. So she was kind of this magic passive thinking that if I do not, I don't have to do anything. I just have to kind of keep being kind of just sitting on the cushion. I just kind of keep showing up for retreats and something will be handed to me. And that, you know, doesn't work that way sometimes for people. Sometimes you have to make some effort. You have to do. You have to engage. So those are, as we come to the end here, I'd like to kind of summarize with two points I'd like you to think about as you leave today. One is the point about your own relationship to effort. Think about it, reflect on it. And the second is this idea of evaluating your effort, what you do, what you're through this principle, is it helpful or not helpful? And do you have a clear sense of what helpfulness and unhelpfulness actually is? Because it does imply a certain kind of sense of purpose or goal or possibility that's the guide. You have to have some idea of what's helpful to know what's helpful. you have to have some idea where you're going to answer the question, what is helpful? And then, so you're at your relationship to effort, understanding this principle of evaluating things by whether it's helpful or unhelpful, and then bring those two together. By then evaluating, is your relationship to effort, your attitude and policy about effort, is it a helpful policy, helpful idea, or is it not helpful? And are there more helpful attitudes you can have about effort than the ones you usually carry with you? So that might be interesting to explore for you. So we have 5 minutes, and it might be nice to get some questions, some comments, some reservations, some further thoughts about this. Maybe time for one or two.
I, like most people, have a morbid feel of public speaking. And I decided that I would pursue more opportunities to do public speaking in hopes to alleviate some of that tension, some of that terror. And by making the effort to take certain classes, to open myself up to those situations, I'm liberating myself from some of these blockades.
Beautiful. So you spoke in front of over 100 people here. And so sometimes we have to put a lot of effort in, sometimes uncomfortable effort. You might have to break into a sweat in order to break through the limitations we're living under. And so that's what you've chosen to do. And then at some point, it becomes easier. And that as it becomes easier, then it becomes more enjoyable, too. That's what you find?
Yeah, it's actually become, and I think part of it is the contrast between how it used to be and how it is now. I'm having fun doing it.
You're having fun doing it. Beautiful.
Yes.
So it was helpful to do this, even though it was uncomfortable and a drag, and it was helpful. It brought you, so you had some sense of what would be helpful, and you had the inspiration and the encouragement and the faith. It was worthwhile doing. Nice. Right behind you.
I guess when we were speaking about the darker sides of effort, someone mentioned striving and being really attached to that striving or clinging to that striving. How do you point yourself in a direction, take effort in a direction that you believe is a good direction, a right direction, but not find that attachment? Or keep the detachment from it?
That's the question. Thank you. Perfect. That's the kind of question I think we keep with us all the time. There's not a one answer that fits it. And it's a lot of it's found through trial and error. You try, You engage, and then you monitor yourself. That's what mindfulness is. Mindfulness is being present as you're doing it, so you have the ability to make corrections. So, you know, sometimes you have to make more effort, and sometimes you have to make, you know, really strong effort, like the lady here who, you know, in a sense she was striving. She had to work hard at it to overcome her fear of public speaking. But at some point, if she overcomes her fear of public speaking entirely, that effort that she maybe I shouldn't speak for you, but the effort you made to really kind of strive and overcome the limitation becomes the wrong effort to make. It was right at a certain point, but at a certain point, once she's having fun doing it, it'll just get in the way. So sometimes, you know, pushing is right, sometimes it's not right. Sometimes striving is the right word, sometimes it's not the right word for what it is. And so we have to monitor ourselves and see what the consequences are. If we're getting tense, that's an indication maybe I need to back off a little bit. If we're getting complacent and falling asleep, maybe I need to make more efforts. Maybe I need to strive a little bit now. Or I've been held back, you know, I keep not doing anything, you know, just sitting and sitting and not, I need to, maybe striving is a good thing for me to overcome. So I think it's trial and error. And trial and error has a lot to do with error. And so it has a lot to do with then learning from, you know, when it's, you know, and it's a little bit like driving a car, you know, on the freeway. As far as I know, no one drives the car perfectly straight in their lane, you know, never wavering one inch. But the cars are constantly, you know, moving a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right. I mean, hopefully it's only a couple of inches. And you have to kind of track that and move it a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right to make up for it, and bring it back to center. So the same thing with effort in like meditation practice. You know, hopefully the swings are not that great. Hopefully you stay in your lane. But it's a little bit too much, that's too little, and so you're finding your way. So it's a good question to have. That's what I want. Keep the question. So thank you all very much.